Hello and welcome to Power of the Parent, the podcast. This series is a new format and we are going to be focusing on a different topic each week, bringing you three things you need to know about, whatever that may be, mainly from an employer perspective. But of course, there's plenty of reframing that parents could do to benefit from the content as well. We will be covering everything from parental leave transitions, managing boundaries, what to do when your talent pipeline looks a bit dodgy, tips on gathering feedback, and things like establishing parental support networks. So, let's dive in. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Power of the Parent, Three Things You Need to Know About. And today I have got a friend with me, like an actual friend as well. So today I'm joined by Holly Straker-Humphreys. Now, Holly is one of those people who has the ability to challenge your thinking while making you feel like you're at your most comfortable to be able to share. She is a Flexa Pioneer Award winner. She is effortlessly navigating conversations in the workplace about diversity, inclusion, and belonging. And she won't shy away from sharing her observations in a practical, solution-focused way. Just ask Dyson. We might come on to that story at some point. Holly is all about creating environments where you can have boundaries and share your story. And that is very much firmly in her wheelhouse. Now, I worked with Holly in the early stages of career and have seen her go from strength to enlightened strength along the way. Sometimes when you've worked with people a long time ago, it's easy to think of them as that same person. And by the way, she was a stand-up person then, but Holly's expertise, learning and thoughtful leadership insights absolutely challenge that. I've seen Holly's career transformation journey move through different life stages, always handled it with curiosity, learning, and the professionalism that carries the take your job, not yourself too seriously. I'm so excited to talk to her about some workplace insights. Our more recent messages have included probably more of a parenting angle based content after she welcomed her little boy into the world in 2024. But today we're going to be exploring three things you need to know about diversity and inclusion while the world is kicking off about it. The three things that Holly's going to talk about are, number one, people from underrepresented communities don't want to steal your jobs, and that comes with an exclamation mark on the end. Number two, our differences mean we need different things, and that doesn't mean that you get nothing. That, I think, might be one of my favourite ones that you've included here. And the third thing we're going to talk about is that a snowflake eye roll situation to you always has a story behind it. If you listen, it might make sense. I am, like I say, incredibly excited to chat with her. Thank you so much for joining me, Holly.
Sure, I feel like that intro, it made me all warm inside. That was so lovely. When you said, oh, do you fancy being on the podcast? I never expected that. So that was lovely.
Oh, thank you. You are very welcome. It is a pleasure to introduce you, you absolute solid gold of a person. So let's dive in to your three things. So the first one that you sent over to me was that people from underrepresented communities don't want to steal your jobs.
Time and time again, we hear this one. And time again, people, I think with the theme with all of my three things to know about is that different narratives from media, social media, societal conversations have just exploded DEI. And actually, the reason why I wanted to cover these three areas was because if you just take a little bit of time to understand really good practice in DEI, you might actually think a little bit differently about it. So that was where I got to with these. But yes, the first one, I think often people have this idea of like diversity is just to put a woman in the job. It doesn't matter if she's going to be good at it, but we've just got to hit a number. And like actually from a perspective of I'm a woman, a mixed race, and actually never in my life would I want to be given a job because of those characteristics. Like I find that actually quite awful. So that type of thinking is not good for the actual person's experience or anybody else's. So I think we need to get rid of that straight away. And instead, what this work seeks to do is to break down the barriers in systems, in processes, level the playing field, improve experiences for our communities, which then lead to equitable outcomes. So I always kind of try and explain it to people like, not everyone starts at the same start line. So all of this work seeks to do is to bring people up to where others might already be. So when I was thinking about this morning, I was thinking about some of the most impactful work that I have worked with talent acquisition teams on to change hiring processes. And I did a bit of a bullet-pointed list. We love a list. Shah, I remember back in the day, we're a big fan of our stationery. I did a list of things, changes to a process that will lead to a more equitable outcome, but doesn't disadvantage anyone or shouldn't. And if we removed the word like inclusive hiring or diversity from like umbrella from this list and just saw it as a best practice in hiring, I think it would come across a bit differently. So, Shah, you tell me if any of these things feel like they should disadvantage or give someone a job ahead of somebody else, not based on their merit and experience. So, giving out interview questions in advance, accepting applications from people who don't have a degree, having compulsory clear assessment criteria and scoring criteria throughout the process, advertising salary bands on all of our roles, offering flexibility as a standard option, introducing a standard list of reasonable adjustments that people can pick from, they don't have to input their own. Line managers are trained on interviewing people with autism and ADHD, and we monitor the demographic data of candidates to check that it's proportionate and fair throughout the process. So if you just put those things in a list under a talent acquisition umbrella, I don't feel like they would have the same reaction as when they come under the diversity umbrella. So yeah, I don't know if you've had any. We hear similar things in this industry, so.
That we do. And I think you have just summed up your day-to-day work. But what a lot of this is that none of it is special treatment. Nobody wants special treatment. We want to be able to have that flexibility of knowing that we've got those different start lines. And that actually, if we don't adjust that start line, that is a problem. And I know it's a really cliched image now, but loads of us will have seen the image, you know what I'm going to say, of the wall and people standing on different sized crates and steps and things like that to be able to see over it. And actually, if we gave everybody the exact same crate, but we're all different heights or whatever, we wouldn't all be able to see over it. I often have this conversation with organizations because of the difference between equal and equitable and what does that actually mean. And let's be honest, equitable isn't a word that has been in everybody's vocabulary for a significant amount of time, and that's fine. But now we do know it, so we do want to focus on it. That's the pushback that I often get about this is special treatment. If we only do this for parents, then we've got to do it for everybody else, or whatever the defense might be. And the amount of times we have to say, this isn't about an issue for parents, or it's not something that is, I suppose, reasonable adjustment might feel differently, but it isn't special treatment because you are neurodivergent, or it's about creating an environment where you can access those jobs, where you can, even if you, I feel quite torn on the phrase bringing your whole self to the workplace nowadays. So I'm overthinking my words because I'm trying not to say that. But I suppose it's having that choice of what you're able to bring to the workplace. If you don't want to hide a part of you, that you don't hide a part of you. And equally for other people, they want those boundaries. You don't have to bring your whole self. But it's about giving people the option, isn't it? And choices. And I think that list sums it up brilliantly as like, why would you not do any of that? Like, what is the issue? And I've never had the voice to talk about it, but I've always had the thoughts around the interview process. Because how many people have we interviewed over the years who just fundamentally, just as a human, are like, I hate interviews, or I don't perform well under interviews, I've just had this whole conversation with my oldest daughter who has just gone through her SATs, and she is somebody that is, she's quite happy doing, happy might be a push. She's all right with doing exams and feels quite relaxed about them. I was not that child. I was horrific at doing exams. I was much more of a give me a piece of coursework to do or a project or something like that, and I will shine, but sit me in an exam room and I will crumble. And she's found, even just at this tender age of 10 and 11, there are some of her friends who have suddenly, this has been their first foray into being tested, and they crumbled under that pressure. And bless her, she came home and she one of her friends hadn't scored what she was hoping for, and she'd been really disappointed. And she said, "Well, I just said to her, Mum, that isn't about how brilliant you are. That's just how you turned up on that day. You can do all of those
Oh,
things. Like, it's not, it is just a test." And you've got to be careful, haven't you, to not completely diminish their emotions and all of those things as well. But you do want to say sometimes, like, it is just a moment in time. And the same goes for that interview process of when you first join a business. And that's the thing I think to remember. As a candidate or as a possible customer, this is the source work, isn't it? So if you don't give that good experience there, like, what is that setting you up for? They may well never want to buy from you, depending on what your business is. Never talk to other people about buying from you. And even if they were to get the job, do you want somebody to start happy and engaged and feel seen? Or do you want them to start having just jumped through several rings of fire?
I think we must lose so many good people to these processes who could absolutely smash a job, be so efficient and drastically like make you a lot of money, but because they can't get through the process, you've lost them. And that's another thing I think people now see DEI as this big inconvenience, but actually in the commercial world, it's got a lot of value. And it's not just about that McKinsey stat that we love to say about diverse teams made the most money. Like, we're losing good people. Let's make it a real story. So yeah, it's crazy, but I can see how we've got there because I do think there's a lot of, I don't know if we can swear on this podcast, but there's a lot of rubbish practice in this area. There's a lot of people who have been moved into these roles based on passion over skill, experience, and the right characteristics to do well in this role because it's a tricky gig, as we know.
Well, when I was returning from my first mat leave, I was going to be put into, at the time, it would have been, would it have been called a D&I manager? I think it would have been. It was not something that I had, in my view, I had lots of opinions, I had lots of passions about it, but there were far better equipped people to do that role than me. And I was like, this, I'm the wrong person for that job. I mean, I caused absolute havoc in not going back and doing that because my director was completely personally affronted. And like, why on earth would I not want this gift of a job?
Also, Shai, you've had a baby. You now it within the protected characteristics. Why would you not want to represent the job?
This is it, isn't it? And you know, you were a woman who you did all right, like you were pregnant as well. So you tick so many of the boxes. Surely you want to do it. No, pal, no, this isn't how it works. And actually, they ended up being able to bring in somebody with far more expertise and experience. It was a much better fit for the job. And it wasn't that I didn't want to make sure that it was a success. That was why I wanted somebody else to do it. I think something that you touched on there as well, that I'll just scoot back around, is the commercial side of this, because again, that's a conversation that I see people squirm about sometimes. All of this work that you and I do, it is absolutely the right thing to do. Like, why would you not do it? It's not about excluding anybody. It's not about making anybody feel bad about the privileges or anything like that. It's the opposite, I think. And it's whatever the opposite of that is. It is about doing it for the right reasons and creating those equitable and thriving organizations and cultures. But I do see that people feel uncomfortable sometimes putting the commercial conversation to it, like they shouldn't. Like, oh, if I say that, then I'm not a nice person because I'm talking about the money that sits behind it or the innovation that sits behind it. But I have opinions about that. How do you feel about the commercial conversations when it comes to this?
I feel like I don't always lead with it. I think the best success I've had in this work is when leaders really truly get into the perspectives of other people and how their experiences are at work. So I'd say more of like a cultural perspective. But then again, I have had real success talking to leaders and those people who feel like this is like a big ball of fluff and waste of time about the value. When you translate D&I into like a product perspective about how many more markets we could be reaching, how many customers we're cutting off, or that type of thing, it's just another way to think differently about how we grow a business. So I think you, as with all of this work, it has to be holistic. It's not just one thing, it's so multifaceted. So I think you should take a full rounded view of it, but if we go back to the reasons why this work has to exist, it's because of all the systemic historical inequities that we don't have time to go into today. So, yes, we don't necessarily lead with, we're here to fix it and make money, but it is an output of doing it the right way.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. So the second thing that you're going to touch on is about our differences, meaning that we need different things. Do you want to talk us through your thoughts
Yeah,
as well?
sure. I feel like we've touched on a bit of this already with some of our examples, but this one came to me when I was in an organization where we're launching a reciprocal mentoring scheme. So you got to be mentored by a member of our C team, but that also gave you the opportunity to educate them about their life experiences. And it was targeted at people from underrepresented communities within the business. I'd literally finished the last sentence of launching the program, and along came the Slido question of why is this just for certain people, and you know how it explodes after that. And like my message was really clear, different people need different things. And because of the different challenges we face, treating everyone equally isn't always fair. And it's not about giving everybody the same thing. If you think about that start line, you'd just be widening the gaps or moving people along, but at the same distance they were before from each other. So this word around equity, and that really made me laugh when you said not a lot of people understand, have heard that in this context. I remember in my last organization when I presented my strategy, people thought I was talking about shares and reward strategy. So equity in this context recognizes that everyone's got different circumstances and we give people what they need to succeed. And sometimes that means these things can benefit us all, but sometimes they are just targeted for certain groups. So a few examples, and I think the loudest one that we're hearing at the moment is there's loads of research and survey data about white men feeling forgotten in the workplace. And due to some of those historic systemic issues that we've talked about, there isn't as much structural inequity that impacts white men, and we can't argue with that. However, it doesn't mean they need nothing. If we look intersectionally, there's still challenges that affect that community. So, a straight, white, able-bodied, white male from a middle-class background might not need a career development program, but they might really benefit from a men's mental health program. And this role is here to do those things too. I think often these roles are so under-resourced, underfunded, that you have to prioritize and you never quite get to that holistic strategy. So the gender, the women in senior leader roles target always comes first. But if we really did this work well, it would have things that worked for and helped everyone with their different challenges. Another example I remember I was working on a project. We're opening a new office, and we did a accessibility audit on the building, and we were talking about things that we could put in place to help different people. And one of those was a suggestion of having noise cancelling headphones in like an open vending machine for people who might experience sensory overload of noise in the office. And whilst, yes, that predominantly may be people with a neurodivergent condition, sometimes I just need to concentrate and I'm so busy talking and like listening to other people's conversations that actually they might benefit me too. So a reasonable adjustment that we can level the playing field for one group might actually benefit us all. But I think all of that gets so lost that we're trying to push all the minorities forward when actually there can be things that help all of us. I think similarly and relevant to your world, at the moment we're seeing a shift in changes to parental leave, and the biggest area that needs work is paternity leave. And that's obviously a demographic of usually men who are in this kind of forgotten bucket. So this idea of feeling forgotten and getting nothing, I think if we do this work well, people should see advantages no matter who you are.
I'm just going to take a sidebar here to give a shout out to equal parental leave and remind any employer listening that that is the gold standard. I love so much of what you have just shared, like realistically there as well. And I think there's sometimes a nervousness for people in saying some of what, and there shouldn't be, but some of that, look, there is a reality that we all will need something at some point. And that doesn't matter what you look like, sound like, what your background is. Any of that stuff, we want to try and create an environment where in when you need something that we can be there. And that doesn't mean that we can do everything all at the same time, all in one go, but we will always try our best. And that's, I think, largely what we can hope and ask for. Some of the examples that you shared there just bring to life that practical. Even if you are a seemingly like you should have it easy in the workplace, whoever you might be that fall into that category, we know that it doesn't always have to be a race to the bottom, and it doesn't also have to be a race to the top. Everybody can have their own challenges, and we can try and figure out what that looks like. This shows up in my work quite a lot around policy-based conversations, and I have seen it quite a lot recently. There is an army of people who will launch brilliant policies, market leading in some instances, some just catching up in others. And that's the headline. We've launched this brilliant policy. And I'm sitting, cynical old me, thinking, I'm really glad that you've got a policy, but what's the lived experience of people? And how is that actually, where's the flexibility in it? And some might say, I'm never happy. I am, I genuinely am. I do want to celebrate when those moves forward do happen. But if I take an example of an employer who might have a carers leave policy, and if that carers leave policy is 5 days over 12 months, and it's no questions asked, and aren't we pleased about that? Like, that's great, that's there. But let me tell you about a parent who has two children who have got complex medical needs, and both of those children are in and out of hospital. They are back and forth to the doctor. They have a relatively low attendance to nursery or their childcare setting or wherever they're being looked after because of those complex medical needs. What does that parent access if you say, well, it's okay, we've got a carers leave policy, you can have your 5 days, brilliant, but where's the other probably 25 or 30 days that realistically they're probably going to need. And that person wants to do a brilliant job. They want to come to work. They want to deliver. They want to be able to look after their children and provide for them. And they want to be able to blend it all. And I don't mean having it all, that's a conversation for a different day. But they want the option to say, actually, I am a performing, I am a high performer, actually, in lots of instances. And some of what I've just shared there is taken from inspiration of clients that I've worked with. There's no performance issue. There's nothing to say you would face it in a different route. Somebody who needs to be looked after, who is going through a tricky time. They're figuring out new family setups. Bring all that back around. Like, of course, one static policy that is flat on a piece of paper or on an intranet or whatever isn't going to serve that person. It might serve somebody else over here who that, five days carers leave, brilliant, may not even ever need to touch them. But that conversation of what is reality, I think, is sometimes missing. So when we are rolling out these brilliant policies, I do think we've got to tell stories better and be like, let me just bring this to life because you, line manager, are going to be the one that gets hit with these questions. So let's help you. Let's not just keep bashing you over the head and being like, line manager's the be all and end all, and it's the line manager lottery. Yeah, absolutely. I'm one of the ones that sings about it all the time. But how can we help you so that when you do have to meet people in different realities, what does that actually look like?
1,000,000%. And I also think, just as a side note on that, best believe that parent, when those kids have gone to bed, is back on their laptop, giving it their everything, because if their employer is giving them that subjective flexibility to deliver their work when they can, be, yes, at the right meetings at the right time when they can, but to be able to have the flexibility to work around that complex part of their life, they're giving everything to that role because they are so hard to come by. Sometimes I think people can see that as a bit of a disadvantage, like, oh, look how much flexibility they're getting. They can't possibly be beneficial to the organization. But actually, I think if they are a high performer and you've given them that, imagine what they'll give back to you. And yes, some people take the piss, but they're a minority.
They are. It really is few and far between. And I think sometimes, and I had quite a blunt conversation with a line manager a few weeks ago who clearly came to the conversation with me. And I was like, look, you just need to pour it all out on the table. You've got to just give me the honest because I can't help if you push stuff down. Just tell me what you're thinking. I would rather hear it and we can talk about it. And they had, in a previous organization, had a really tricky time managing somebody who also happened to be a parent. Now, the reality was with this situation, and I'm only hearing it from this line manager, but they didn't want to be in the workplace. They were absolutely taking the piss left, right, and center. There was one week where this kid had apparently had about four different school plays, and it wasn't even December or July. They weren't. I know they were looking for another job, but they kept using the kid as an excuse. Now, I can understand why you then very quickly escalate to, well, all parents are going to be like that. I don't agree with you. I don't agree that you should let that happen, but I can understand your train of thought and I can deal with that if we surface it. But that's two different things. You don't conflate being a parent with you're less ambitious or less committed. That person was not in the right job, not in the right organization. No, it's not the best thing to do to go behind somebody's back and be like, I'm going to my kids' play. But also, they were never going to tell you that they were looking for another job. So there were other ways around it, but let's try and move on from that like cognitive bias that you're now holding and think, well, what are some of the other outcomes here? And that, yeah, far better to deal with it when it's surfaced than when it's down.
For real.
Now, the final thing that you were going to talk about is that snowflake eye roll situation will always have a story behind it. Can you talk to us a bit about that?
Yeah, so for anyone that might not understand what I mean by this, so the Gen Z is particularly being branded as this snowflake generation, very sensitive, complain about everything, you can't make any jokes anymore, it's so dull, and da, 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 da. And the eye roll towards that kind of mentality. I mean, will be no surprise on the other hand, whatever the Gen Zs have been branded as, I am here for it because I love their vibe for social justice. They don't chase like this middle class normal life of paying off a mortgage with two kids and a dog, and like they just want to break the mold, and I think it's brilliant. But what I do see so much is this kind of jump to, oh, it's another one of those, or it's another time I've been told off for not being PNC. And yes, there are times where people potentially could be oversensitive, like we are all different. But I think if everyone in these situations took the time to listen to the reason why the person was impacted in that way, you might think about it differently and have a bit more patience with it. We're not here saying that you need to fully understand and back and fight for the reason why someone wants to be known as X rather than Y, but you might just have a little more patience and a little more understanding and being able to work with it better. So one of my favorite quotes is a Maya Angelou quote, which it's when we know better, we do better. And I always like to think that we only know what we know and the life that we've lived ourselves. So it's impossible to understand everyone else's perspective just by your own world experiences and the things that you've done in your life. But if we have a level of patience and curiosity and take some time to listen and educate ourselves about how someone else experiences the world, you might understand more about why something that seems so insignificant to you is really fundamental to someone else. And I had a project recently where I was working with a local business and someone was offended by the music played in that environment because the music played in that environment used the N word. And this was music by Black artists. So it was kind of like in the context of reclaiming the N word. So it wasn't done in a racist, offensive tone, but still it's a racist word, so the person was offended by the music. But at the same time, the business owner had been told by other members of the Black community that they felt really represented in this organization because they were playing this type of music. So they were unsure of how to kind of navigate the situation. And it was easy for people to kind of take the approach of, oh, people are just offended by everything. This music's played everywhere. Like, what do? They not turn on the radio, you know? So rather than taking that approach, we explored that because that person was from an older generation and another generation, that word means a completely different thing. So I reflected on some of my family's experiences. So, like my mum and my uncle's generation, where when they walked out of school in Hare Hills, they were greeted by the National Front, and my uncle would be chased home by skinheads and being shouted that word at him. Whereas, whilst racism is still alive and well, I think it's moved to a more subtle kind of form and guise, mostly in the kind of current generation. So the millennials and Gen Zs, potentially, not probably, because it definitely still does exist, but are less likely to have experienced such direct, explicit kind of racism. So, and use of that word. So when we flipped it and looked at it from that perspective, you could then see why this was having such an impact on that person. So we were able to resolve it just by agreeing to play clean versions of the same music. So there's always a way to navigate. Nobody had to lose out in that situation. So, yeah, I think just by understanding and taking a bit of time to explore and investigate can really help you get to a place of not being annoyed and frustrated at these types of things. And I think the explosive hot topic at the moment that's being weaponized all over is around pronouns. And to, let's say, Sophie across the road, who lives in her world and societal norms that she's been exposed to, could seem so alien that someone might use a different pronoun. But I wonder how many people like that, with that mindset, have sat down with someone from that community and listened to their story. And I'm not saying that Sophie then wants to change her pronouns to he, him. Like, that's not what we're trying to achieve. We're just trying to say that Sophie might then understand a little bit more and be a bit more tolerant and a bit more accepting and welcoming around why someone may use a different pronoun, for example. So, yeah, I'm very big on DEI being most effective in that mindset shift through experiential learning rather than e-learning. Clients, I've seen a lot of powerful stuff happen in organizations when you take a leadership team out of our lovely Leeds offices and go into the community in some of the most deprived areas of the city and help them see things a little bit differently. I think experiential can be really powerful because you just can't argue with someone's life and like how their world has been. And I think that can change a lot in this industry and way of thinking, because at the moment, a lot of it's just like clickbait headlines that just fire people up. And to be honest, if I didn't work in this job and I wasn't from my background and mixed with the people that I mixed with, some of that stuff I'd be like, oh my God, yeah, I get it. Like, what are they talking about? It's ridiculous. So you can so see how it happens. But yeah, I'm a big fan of just taking time to listen to others' experiences and what that can unlock for you and your way of thinking about the world.
I absolutely love that, and I think that it's the power of storytelling, isn't it? And listening, but really listening. And I think we often do live in a world where we feel like we've all got to have an opinion, or we've all got to be an expert. And actually, sometimes it's okay to just say, actually, I don't have an opinion on that, or maybe I do, but I might not share it out loud right now, or I'm kind of still working through some of this stuff. And actually, sometimes some of the most damaging situations that I've seen play out are when people are so hell-bent on this is the way of the world, this is how it should be, and it just ignites. And just, can we all take a step back and listen to each other? Come on, stop chucking toys out and instead focus a little bit on what is that other person saying? Because, like you say, there's always something behind it that will help it make sense. You don't have to 100% agree with somebody. You don't have to. There's a somebody that I am connected with on LinkedIn who is a CEO of a business, and I'm going to interview her later in the year on the podcast. And something that she talks about a lot is reminding people that you don't have to have had the exact same experiences in life to be able to support somebody. You don't have to walk in somebody else's shoes. You can drive compassion and have some feelings for people without having to have their exact same life experience. Like, stop making that the defense. Well, I don't know because I don't look like that person, or I don't sound like that person, or I don't have that diagnosis that person has. Like, absolutely. And thank goodness we all don't, because we don't all want to be the same. So,
Amen.
I think that's a really lovely place for us to end the conversation, which I could absolutely talk to you for hours, days, weeks. I know that people are going to listen to this and they're going to want to come and get more of you in their life. So I'm guessing that LinkedIn is going to be the best place to find you and connect.
Yeah, for sure. And then you might find the Dyson story in there too.
It is there. I saw it today. I remember when it happened. And then when I saw it, I was like, oh my gosh, yes. If you'd have asked me when that had happened, I could have either told you it was like 2 weeks ago or 5 years ago. I think it was about
Well,
5 years.
I'm actually sat next to the device in question.
Are you?
I still have the Dyson Air app. So, yeah.
Other brands and products are available, and
Yeah.
other brands and products also need feedback. We are in no way endorsing it. Thank you so much for sharing your glorious brain, your practical insights. There are so many stories and examples in here that I hope organizations can listen to and just go take on the world with a fresh pair of eyes, because that is definitely what you bring, Holly. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, Shah.
Take care.
Bye.
Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of Power of the Parent, the podcast. If you have got a few spare minutes, who am I kidding? Of course you haven't got a few spare minutes, but if you would like to choose to spend a few of your minutes giving me any sort of review or rating, I would massively appreciate it. It does help other people find it, and it also lets me know that I'm hitting the spot with listeners. For more free resources, you can head to the show notes, where you'll find a link to the Power of the Parent website, or do head on over to LinkedIn and give me a follow. Search Charlotte Speak and my grinning face should pop up. Until next time, take care.